For any of your last-minute Christmas shopping at Amazon.com, go to our website, MysteriousTopics.com, first and click on our link to Amazon.com, and then do your shopping, and you'll be supporting this podcast in doing so, and it will not cost you anything extra. And we would appreciate that very much. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mysterious Topics and the nighttime podcast coverage of the History Channel's series, Curse of Oak Island. Joining me is Jordan from the nighttime podcast. Hi, Jordan.
Hello, John. Hello, listeners. I hope everyone's doing great.
Yeah, I hope they are, too. It's, well, just as a quick aside, it is 4 degrees here right now, Fahrenheit, which is the equivalent of somewhere around 15 below Celsius, I guess. Do you know what your current temperature is?
Yeah, we have a temperature warning for tomorrow. Right now it's about minus 10 Celsius. Let me do the conversion here. So we're minus 10, so that's 14 Fahrenheit. But tomorrow it's going to be minus 30, which is minus 22 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, yeah, and we're in the same boat. Yeah. We're going to have like 30 below wind chills. And we had that last night and early this morning, but now we're getting a snowstorm coming tomorrow. Afternoon it starts, so it's going to warm up a little bit. It always does when we get a big snowstorm. But by warming up, I mean it might be 15 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. We had a bit of snow today. Tomorrow, as I said, it'll be minus 30. The next day, Saturday, they say it's going to be plus 11. So we're going from minus 30 to plus 11 within 24 hours, which is pretty insane.
Yeah. Yeah, we're supposed to get between 8 inches and a foot of snow Friday night into Saturday, and then it will go back down to like 4 degrees the next day.
You have a snowblower?
Oh yes.
Do you have it? Like, did you turn it on? Get it all set up for the year yet?
Oh yes, it's ready to go.
Okay, because I had a bit of an issue. I forgot to drain the gas out of it last year, so I had a bunch of stale gas. I had to go to the dollar store and buy a turkey baster and like suck out all the gas out of the gas tank. And anyway, but in the middle of dealing with that, I realized that it has a throttle. I don't know anything about like machines, but I know like the term like to go like full throttle means like full power.
Yes.
So I just like while I was snowblowing the other day, it's throwing the snow, and I'm like, oh, I should see what this throttle does. And I turned it from like a picture of a turtle to a picture of a rabbit. And the snowblower, it was like in Mario when you eat the mushroom. It just turned into like Uber snowblower. And it went from throwing like the snow like 10 feet to like 45 feet away or something. But and even like the little light, like my snowblower has a light, and I'm used to it just being like kind of this flickering dim light. And all of a sudden when I turn up the throttle, it's like a spotlight that lit up my whole yard. But snowblowing is a blast now that I know about that.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a pretty high-powered one. Mine is a, I would say on the smaller side, but the throttle, you open the throttle to start it, and once it gets warmed up, you can push it back in. Otherwise, it won't run as well. So that's the way mine works.
Okay. Well, mine has that thing where I like you open it, and then when it warms up, you close it or whatever. But there was another thing.
Or the choke. I guess that is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the choke. Then the throttle is just like, I guess just controls how much power it has. But you should see if your snowblower has it. Mine has it in a weird spot. I never would have noticed it had I not been going through the manual trying to figure out how to get the stale gas out of it. But anyway.
Well, that's what I was going to say about that, too. Instead of going to the grocery store for the turkey baster, they do have little tubes with a pump in the middle that you can buy at the hardware store that make it a lot easier.
Turkey baster was like $2.
Okay.
I'm living on a podcaster's budget here, John.
Yeah. Okay, well, we better get started, even though we're both sheltering ourselves from the freezing temperatures.
Yeah, I want to stay in this room. My recording space is nice and warm, so this may be a couple hours long. I also, after snow blowing today, I was just had a chill, so I got a bath. I laid in the bath for like an hour, so I'm very relaxed.
All right, great. Well, we're all set. We're all toasty warm and ready to talk about episodes 4 and 5 of The Curse of Oak Island. Episode 4 was titled No Stone Unturned. And it pretty much started out with them bringing in a bunch of very heavy equipment towards the money pit. And I just remember Marty saying something to the effect of, we're going to dig a big hole in the money pit and see what's there. Like, he was all excited. And so they brought in this thing called the oscillator. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's cool to see them using modern equipment. Although it comes up more so in the Bullseye episode, they're kind of walking a fine line between what Dan Blankenship did and what Dunfield did, where they have kind of, you know, the heavy equipment on there, unlike anything the island's ever seen, but they are doing it with precision and they're being careful to, you know, to maintain the island's beauty and, you know, natural elements. But that oscillator thing, to describe it would be a little tough, but the best way to see it, it's like the machine equivalent of like grabbing a pipe, sticking it into the ground and just kind of turning it back and forth as the pipe slowly descends into the ground. Except instead of being a pipe you'd hold in your hand, this is a massive thing that you could swim down.
It's 5 feet in diameter, I believe.
Yeah, so it makes 10x jealous when you look at the diameter that this thing has.
Yeah, this thing looks just like a big donut, and it does, like you said, the same thing. If you were to grab a stake and put it in the ground, if you're going to, you know, set up a badminton net or something, and you grab it with your hands and you just twist it back and forth trying to push it in the ground, that's exactly what this thing does. It kind of moves it back and pushing it down into the ground. And
yeah, and what was cool is as it's doing that, there's a separate thing, which is like, sorry, I dropped something, you probably heard that, but there's a separate thing where it's like kind of like, I compare it to like kind of like a claw you'd use in that game where the kids game where there's all the stuffed animals and you control the claw that drops down, maybe grabs the toy, but that the whole time is dropping down through the tube, through the pipe that's being oscillated into the ground, grabbing the dirt from within, pulling it out. And so it's efficient. It's the two things going at once, is the pipe being twisted and descending into the ground and the separate claw pulling the dirt out from within.
Yeah.
Very cool system. It's, although it's big, heavy equipment, it's kind of a primitive concept, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that thing was called, it's called a hammer grab, and that that thing alone weighs 8 tons.
Jeez.
And the one difference between that game you were talking about and that hammer grab is whatever that hammer grab grabs, it's going to bring out of the hole. Whereas it seems like every time you put that claw thing around one of the stuffed animals or whatever it is inside the thing, it slips out.
Yeah. But anyway, but that's all. We kind of jumped ahead a bit there because in No Stone Unturned, they're kind of just bringing the equipment on at the beginning and getting it set up, setting up kind of just like from the beginning of the series of this season. Sorry, they're setting up the fact that they're going to do this big dig at the site of the money pit. No Stone Unturned starts with, you know, that what they've been teasing us with slowly starting to come to fruition. It's starting to happen.
Yes. And they started out by showing this equipment arriving, and they had the pipes there. But then they did go right to, after that, the investigation of that money pit stone, the 90-foot stone.
Yeah, and this is what's really cool about this. I'm happy to say the guy who is one of the main guys in this episode, his name is Cal Hancock. He's a close friend of mine. In fact, I'm a member of an investigation or a research group with both Cal and Doug, who are major players on this season up until this point. Cal and Doug and their Blockhouse Investigations, they for the last few years have been after the 90-foot stone. They managed to find a lot of information that previously was unknown that led them to find the actual building the stone was kept in when it was in a bookbindery in downtown Halifax, which is my city. The building that it was stored in was long thought to have been demolished, but Cal and Doug have found evidence to prove otherwise. And a lot of the research they've been doing is what was used in this episode to go to their site, and I should, or to go to that building in downtown Halifax, which is now a part of NASCAD University, which is the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design. Anyone who's interested in the work they do, I highly recommend you check out their website. It's called the Oak Island Compendium. They do very in-depth research on all things Oak Island. Some of it has proven a lot of the parts of the legend of the story or the history of the island that have been told. A lot of the work they've done has proven that a lot of the legend's incorrect. And they're now working as contractors with the private contractors with the people who run the show, basically to help keep the story accurate when it comes to the history. But their website is incredible. And they also have a Facebook group, which is, I think it's just called the Oak Island Compendium Group. And Kel and Doug are on there all the time, you know, talking about their research and the different articles they published about the island.
Cool. So this building, it was in 1909, I think, or somewhere right around there, it was what's called the Creighton and Marshall Stationers, and they were apparently bookbinders, and they did other things with publishing. And back then, in that year, 1909, some treasure hunter by the name of Captain Henry L. Bodewin, along, I guess, with FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, came there to see if they could locate the stone, and they apparently found this book company using it as a base to shave leather binders or something like that.
Yeah, or even to beat the leather off of. And I think they had said that it had worn down the stone and it was hard to, you know, even make out the carvings. But I guess what Kel and Doug hoped is by going in the building, maybe they would find it in a dark corner somewhere or maybe embedded into the floor or the wall. So a lot of the episode was going through that building, poking around in the basement. Something that was, they didn't really get into it much in the show. They just kind of hinted to it. But there's one mystery about my city, Halifax, that I've been captivated with for years. There's long rumored to be underground tunnels that stretch all throughout the downtown core. Like, it's a very old city and it has a military history. There's, again, said to be these tunnels that exist all below the city, and some are even said to extend under the harbor. The city itself has denied that they exist, but a lot of the landowners and the building owners downtown have shown photos and even had sent a journalist for CBC into one of the tunnels. And in this episode, when they're down in the basement, they found the stone archway that was boarded off. I believe that to be an entrance to those tunnels that exist. Although it was boarded off, we couldn't see in it. But that was very cool for me to see that on Oak Island.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a episode for your podcast to cover and see if you can actually locate some of those tunnels.
Well, that'd be cool. And another spot that the tunnels are said to connect to, and one of the main entrance points to this tunnel network, is through the next building they left and that they go to. When they couldn't find the 90-foot stone in the initial site, the former bookbindery, they then went to the Halifax Club, which is another well-known Halifax building, where it had been rumored that the stone was given to the Halifax Club as a gift and that it was embedded somewhere in the floor. So that's where the next part of the episode took place, is them at the Halifax Club. We didn't get to see the tunnels in the Halifax Club, but just another connection with my show that I should bring up. The most recent episode of my show was my Halloween special. And within that Halloween special, it was stories of haunted places around Halifax. And one of the four places that was covered in my show was the Halifax Club, which is long rumored to be haunted. So it was just cool for me. I just had finished researching the Halifax Club, not knowing that it would appear on my favorite television show a month later.
Yeah, and I think, didn't they go into the basement of that building?
Yeah, there was some like construction going on in the building, and they were down in the basement. They didn't find much of anything, but...
Well, but they did go when they went in the basement, and then there was another level, a little door that they went through in the floor that went lower. Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe that's the tunnels that you're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, it likely is. I believe the article that I read, or the CBC article where they sent a journalist into the tunnels, I think that was from that the entrance point that they entered was through the basement of the Halifax Club. So that could likely be it. But what's odd is I had been researching the tunnels after doing my Halloween episode because I was going to get into it, but I just couldn't find enough information. But unrelated to that, the municipal government of Halifax had spoke to CBC about an unrelated story and in that article they had denied that these tunnels exist. So I don't know what the story is, why they're hiding it. They probably just don't want people down there.
Yeah, probably not. If they're that old, and as you said, if they're even running under the harbor or the bay, they might be unsafe.
Likely are.
Yes. So I just wanted to get back to when the treasure hunter and FDR supposedly came there and noticed them using the stone. So I'm thinking at that point they have reports that in 1909 it was so worn away that you couldn't identify it. And that's kind of depressing to hear about. But on the other hand, those people in that building at the time, they knew these people were coming to look at the stone, and maybe they didn't want them to take the stone or to see it or something, and maybe they just had another stone that they said was it.
Yeah, could be. It's I guess we can leave it to our imagination as to what happened to the stone. There's just a part of me, ever since I first heard of the stone, well, I shouldn't say that. As a kid, I, of course, believed it existed, but the older I get, the less and less I believe that that stone even existed. And I definitely don't consider the interpretation of the markings in it to be accurate at all. But I don't know. I would love it if they found it. I'd love to see it. And if I did see it, that would absolutely change everything that I feel and believe about Oak Island.
Yeah, I guess it would. I would, at least as they said on the show, that if it existed and somebody would have made a, they call it a rubbing of it, where they put a piece of type of a paper over it and rub over it and they get an impression of it, sort of like a carbon copy.
Yeah.
Even if they produce one of those, a carbon copy of the rubbing, that would prove that there was something like that. And then, yeah, that would be... it would be nice to know. And it is very, like you said, the interpretation of it, something, what was it, so many feet below 2 million pounds lay or something like that.
Yeah. But the thing is somebody, like the interpretation came from somebody remembered what the carvings looked like and drew that. And then they interpreted that. So it's like if I showed you a bunch of symbols you've never seen before, even if I just showed it to you and let you stare at it for an hour, and then immediately pass you a pen and paper, you probably couldn't recreate it, let alone a week later or a month later or something like that. I don't know the exact history of it. Kel would be a good person from Oak Island Compendium, but there was a period of time before the person drew what they remembered seeing. So I don't know. I don't take much stock in it, but if I did see the 90-foot stone and it was carved up the way people, the way people believe it to be carved up, that would make it, without any doubt in my mind, that, that there's definitely something going on Oak Island. But yet still now, as interested in it as I am, I'm always questioning, is this all just natural stuff or is it man-made? And it's so hard to tell. I'm always on the fence going back and forth.
Yeah. Well, so the only other events that were taking place on this episode were that Craig Tester and his stepson, Jack Bagley, went to Smith's Cove, and they had a couple guys with ground-penetrating radar to go back and forth and see if they could locate the flood tunnels or the box drains underneath the beach in that area. Mm-hmm. And they went back and forth. And, again, this is one of those things where they do something, and it got a couple of hits, but they said it doesn't really show, basically, I don't think it really gave them any sort of evidence of anything.
No, one way or another, nothing.
No.
And I almost feel like they should just give up on trying to use any type of radar or technology that looks into the ground. There's always just a bunch of question marks associated with the results.
Right. And then also the other event was that Lee Lamb came for a visit again. Now, she is the daughter of Robert Restall and the sister of Robert Jr. Restall, who both died when they were working on the money pit.
Yeah, and she was there. Well, she wasn't there when it happened, but she was living on the island during that tragedy.
Yes. And She came back, and apparently the last, I know she was on the series before, and it was, they said 3 years ago. It's hard to believe it was that long ago, but in real time that she actually visited. I don't know if that was, it must have been three seasons ago on the show too then.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's that long. I do remember her being on there though.
Yeah. So, and but she surprised them because she brought this fabled stone that has 1704 carved in it that she was told by her father they found on that Smith's Cove beach when they were trying to dig out and see if they could find the flood tunnel. And what did she say? I think her father told her that they found it about a couple, just a couple, 2-3 feet deep. But it was that, yeah, it was under the beach, about that far.
Yeah, when looking at the stone, I've never held it in my hand, but looking at it on TV, it looked very clean, and the carving looks fairly fresh. I immediately questioned whether or not that was carved in 1704.
Yeah, it looked very, very good.
But she may have had it in her house, and maybe they cleaned it up, or you know, she could. I don't know how you'd clean a stone, but you could definitely clean it up and make it look newer.
Well, yeah, and
like and even just having it inside to dry out and stuff would probably change the appearance.
Like you said, the numbers were just perfect on there too. I'm thinking if I were a guy living back in 1704, you know, and on a ship of some sort, whether it was pirates or just other guys, you think, and you had the tools to, I would do a really crummy job of putting numbers on. It would look like a, you know, like a third grader did it or something.
Yeah. I just find a lot of the stuff that they find and associate with the island, it's just all convenient. Like to find a rock that just happens to have like a year carved in it or a symbol of a religious sect or something. I just feel like the chances of finding something that's that specific would just be so, so low. And I said this last time we talked about them finding the hooked X. It's just, if you came to a post-apocalyptic version of any city, the chance of you finding like, you know, the year of the apocalypse or the name of the city on like the first thing you pick up, which just seems like it'd be so, so low. Like really what would likely happen is you'd find, the first thing you would find would be like a, you know, a chip bag or like a something from a can of pop, and you'd think they, you know, they worshipped Pepsi or something. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And then episode 4 closed out with them having that oscillator set up with the pipe, first pipe in it, ready to go down. And they elected Dan Blankenship to turn it on for the first time. Now, Dan, of course, built 10X or dug 10X out virtually with him and his son, Dan, and just a couple other helpers from time to time, but pretty much by hand. And I think the guy that had that machine there mentioned something about that. He was very happy to meet Dan. He said, he looked at Dan and said something about, here, you've dug this out with your bare hands and now we've got this machinery. And he said, oh no, we didn't do it by hand. We had a pick and a pickaxe and a shovel.
Huh. Yeah. Definitely a different world that Dan did his work in.
Yeah. So he turned it on, and that's how episode 4 ended. And then episode 5, Bullseye, the next week, picks up pretty much right where they left off. They made the comment that they had been doing, the oscillator had been working for, I think it was just a couple hours, they said, and it had gotten down about 20 feet, 15, 20 feet, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as they were digging out what is called the spoils, the dirt from inside with that big hammer grab tool that's attached to a crane. And then they dumped it into a big dump truck and they drove it over to another part of the island and spread it out. And that's where Jack Begley and...
it was Charles Barkhouse with him.
Yes, Charles Barkhouse was with him. And they were leveling it out and then going over it with a fine comb to find whatever they could with a radar detector and that, and, you know, just seeing what they could find.
A metal detector, not a radar.
Oh, I'm, yes, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know what you meant. But yeah, and they weren't finding much, but everything they were finding is interesting because, of course, it's coming from deep within the site of the money pit.
Yes. And they were pointing out there were a couple things they found. a big piece of wood that was cut square, and it had a little notch in it, and there was a dowel in it. And, you know, you're thinking, well, anything that has a dowel in it must be fairly old. But, you know, here the other thing is, of course, there's been so many attempts to dig down right in, that's the money pit area, that who knows, that could have been from one of the other treasure hunters over the many years that tried to get down in there.
Oh, exactly. There's been so many pits dug and reinforcing walls built and all that stuff that it's, you know, they're likely just digging up stuff that somebody in the last, you know, 50, 100 years left behind.
They did find a shell casing, and it still was full of dirt, so you hardly tell that it was even a shell. You could tell it was a shell casing, but you couldn't tell how old it was or anything. I'm sure they'll get that examined, and maybe we'll find out in the next couple of weeks. And also a little piece of what they called silver. They thought it was a piece of silver. And immediately the voiceover guy says, could this be part of the treasure?
Yeah, well, you never know. Who knows if it's silver? It could just be steel. But
yeah,
they'll find out. It didn't look old. It didn't look rusted or anything. It looked in good shape, but I guess we'll have
to
see.
if it were real silver, it would, you know, that pretty much stays the same. So that's the hope for it being that. But again, this was just with the first couple scoops, so it was pretty high towards the top of the surface.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to, like, as you're watching it, this episode was kind of a slow burn, is the way I put it. It's just that you were almost watching every scoop of dirt come out, just waiting for, you know, from their digging or Charles and Jack's examination of the debris. It was just, it was very methodical. They're taking their time. It wasn't the most captivating television, although it did have its moments this episode.
Yes. And this episode also had the crew meeting author Randall Sullivan at a restaurant. And now he is the author of an article that appeared in the Rolling Stone. Was it 2004? I think, 2004.
Yeah, they said 13 years ago. So maybe it was 2004, around there anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't realize the article was where they got the name for the show. The article was called The Curse of Oak Island.
Yeah, I didn't either. I did not either. Now, this is not the original article about it that inspired Rick and Marty. It was in the Reader's Digest, and that was many more years ago in the mid-60s, 1965, I think.
Yeah.
So this is a more recent article, but another good article about Oak Island.
Yeah, I have never read this article. I've been meaning to track it down. But this article talked a lot about the feud between Dan Blankenship and Fred Nolan. I think they both took part in this article. It'd be cool to read it. But I was kind of impressed. The author came on to, you know, talk about what he does in his article, but also announced that he's there researching for a book he plans to write on Oak Island. And I think great idea. The island and its history is so incredible. There's a lot of books that have been written about Oak Island, but there isn't like the definitive book that really tells the story in a compelling way. Most of the books about Oak Island, usually the author has a theory as to what happened, and a lot of the book is them presenting their theory. Like you had the miner. I can't remember his
John
name.
O'Brien.
Yeah, you had John O'Brien on, a great book, popular book, but that book is mainly him presenting his theory. And there's lots of other similar books presenting theories. It'd be cool with someone like this, like a seasoned journalist, to come in and just tell the story in a real, in, you know, in an interesting and an entertaining way, but keep it accurate. Hopefully he does it.
Yeah, well, and the other important point about the Oak Island mystery is that it is a continuing story. So not too many people have written about the current events there. And obviously he wants to do that. And looks like he got a seal of approval from the Laginas to do just that.
Yeah, definitely. Something to look forward to. I don't know how long it takes to read a book, but I don't think it's going to be out in time for this Christmas.
No.
which is a shame.
No, and then he did meet Dan Blankenship later on and talk to him after having not seen him for that 13 years. And they had an interesting conversation.
Yeah, that kind of had some moments that were bordering on heated, I thought. Dan was kind of challenging him at some points. That was a cool scene. You kind of see that when you get to a topic that's passionate for Dan or Fred Nolan, you can just see the years fall off them and they become young men, passionate, you know, pointing their fingers and making their point. I forget exactly what the author said, but it was...
What he said exactly to start out was that I always sort of disregarded the pirate theory.
Yes.
And Dan was saying, well, why do you say that? And so, but Dan launched right in about Pizarro sacking the Inca Empire in that would have been in the Peru region of South America in the early 1700s, I think it was. And his whole theory, but I wondered how him disregarding pirates would also disregard the Pizarro and Inca Empire idea. I didn't know that they were tied in with pirates.
Huh. Yeah. Good point. I'm not sure myself.
The only thing I could think was that Pizarro got attacked by pirates on his way back to Spain from Peru or something. I don't know, but that was a little bit confusing to me why he immediately went into the Pizarro story after Randall Sullivan said he was disregarding any of the pirate stories. And Randall did say that to the Laginas and crew at that restaurant too, about, well, do you really think there was a pirate crew sophisticated enough to do something that this large of an operation? And also, my question about the pirate theory was, why would pirates bury something a couple hundred feet below the surface or 150 feet or whatever it is? You know, they usually, I mean, they were going to come back and get it, so they usually didn't put things down that that deep.
Yeah, that's always been something I thought.
Yeah.
But it was, I think they just heavily edited that interview or that segment kind of just to show the best parts of it. And maybe that's why the content kind of was lost to you a bit the direction of the conversation was lost a bit. Maybe it was just heavily edited.
Yes, that very well could be. They probably did just that. So I'm trying to think, was there anything else that happened on the Bullseye episode other than the ending?
Well, no, basically it started with the dig, went into the journalist, Richard Sullivan, was that the name?
Randall
Sullivan, yeah. It went to his segment, and then it went back to the dig at the site of the money pit, and that was pretty much, we watched them approach where they expected the vault that they've been digging to. We just watched every step of the way, and that was the last segment of the episode, is just watching them go basically shovelful by shovelful, waiting to pull out something other than just mud and rock.
Yes, and I did notice a couple of those pulls when they were bringing it up. There was a lot of water draining out.
Yeah.
Along with the mud they were pulling out. So there's water down there. If they're planning on sending somebody down there, well, it would have to be a diver or somebody with a big pump.
Yeah. Well, we all know the story of the money pit, filling with water. That's going to happen again. I'm sure of it.
Yes.
And it's, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I wonder if they could send a diver down, you know, the diver, I can't remember his name now, Samson? Tony, yeah. Samson, was it?
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
I was just thinking if they could send him down to see, obviously the water level would be right about where the flood tunnel was coming in. Maybe he'd be able to figure out a way to plug that hole there.
Yeah. The problem is, though, is that with this technique, the way they're getting down there, there's nothing to see. Like if you go down
that pit,
you're just going to see the metal wall and the dirt and a dirt floor.
Yeah. So the metal tubing would keep the flood tunnel out until you got down to the end of the metal tubing, I guess.
Yeah. So the water would have to be coming up from below.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But basically, the way the episode ends is them just digging and digging, pulling up rock and mud and water. And the crew is starting to feel it's turning into a cloudy day because they're thinking that they're not going to find anything, and they were fully expecting to find wood and the entrance to what they hope to be a vault. Then at the very end of the episode, sure enough, they after bucketful of dirt and rock, they pulled up a bunch of little scraps of wood, and now they're certain that they're right where they want to be. And it really sets up now what ended up stopping them digging further is Rick was worried that if they just kind of just keep going down, they're going to destroy the vault. Marty wanted to continue to dig. I think everybody else wanted to dig. But I think Rick's whole thing was, let's just take it easy and make sure we don't destroy anything going further. And I can get his idea on that.
Yeah, but if they were hitting the vault, I thought they said they even showed on their little animation that the vault was covered with a concrete layer on top too. So did they show any evidence of the concrete with the wood?
No, all they found were just little scraps of wood. But I think what Rick's fear was that whatever, like, you know, the next, as that grabber thing went down, if it grabbed one more time, maybe it was going to start doing damage to whatever's in there. And I think what he wanted was a careful, deliberate technique to get stuff out of there without damaging it. Or maybe they just wanted a creative way to put it off until next week.
Yeah, I think that might be more accurate, because with all of the work and on all of that they've gone through now, like you said, I would think just send that sucker down there and pull up and see if there's some treasure hanging off the end of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. But that's kind of the Dunfield way to do it.
Well, the Dunfield was all out just explosion.
Yeah, drop dynamite down there and just see what comes up, see what explodes up.
Yeah, this is more laser surgery compared to that.
Yeah, they said that during this episode. They said we're doing surgery compared to what Dunfield did. But yes. Either way, it's the next episode. I guess we should. The next episode, I know the name is going to be called Circles in Wood. I don't know what you can take from that, but it's going to be. I'm certain they're going to do some more work at the Money Pit. And we're going to see what's down there. They showed the brief preview of next week, and surely that's what's going to happen. One thing I did see today when I was just doing some research for this online, I saw some of the ratings. Looking at the viewers, it's listed in millions on the site I was on. I was kind of worried that the ratings would be low for the season, but that's not at all the case. As I went through each of the seasons, the average for the first season was about 2.5 million. Second season was a little bit lower, around 2.25 million. Third season, more getting near 3 million. And now at the fourth season, we're trending almost around 3 million viewers per episode. The last two episodes, the season premiere started with 2.6 million viewers. These last two episodes both had 2.95 million viewers. So the ratings, as the show's going on, even though they're not finding anything or really moving the story forward, it's not affecting the viewership. It's still very strong. It's certainly one of the most watched shows on cable television.
Well, I think it's obvious that the viewership has picked up a lot since we started talking about it.
Yeah, that's it. So it's all the mysterious topics listeners are watching.
Yeah. But, okay. Well.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that I hope that the popularity of the show. Well, as I'm saying what I just thought when I say it and I hear it myself saying it. Maybe I don't think this, but. The show is popular. I like that because that may mean that we get more of The Curse of Oak Island. That being said, I can think of some of my favorite television shows that should have been canceled two seasons before they did because people kept watching X-Files, for example. It just, you know, the viewers were there, so they just kept the train rolling. And the last few seasons were pretty weak. And there's, you know, a lot of shows that happened to. Hopefully that doesn't happen to The Curse of Oak Island, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I can't imagine it lasting even another year, just because that, you know, they're spending a lot of money and they're not going to keep wanting to spend all that money if they aren't finding anything.
Yeah, well, this is 2 million. They said they spent 2 million just on the site of the Money Pit.
Yeah, just that machinery and the men to operate it. Yes, that's a lot of money. And like I said, you just can't keep spending money like that and not getting any results.
No, absolutely not.
So, okay, well, I guess that does it for this episode of the recap of The Curse of Oak Island. So I'd like to thank you, Jordan, again for being here and discussing it with me today.
My pleasure. It's I'm honored that you invite me back bi-weekly, John.
Yeah, well, I think it's great. I enjoy doing it a lot myself, too. Okay, well, thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Thanks for listening.